Devices Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Pulse of Bodybuilding and Fitness. I'm Scott McNally, and with me back again on the mic, Dave, the Pulsinator, Pulsinilla. Dave, what's up, brother?
Round two, brother.
We made it. We made it. Barely, but we made it.
I'm always stronger in round two anyway.
Yeah.
I've been told.
Nice.
That's the word has it. what's going on, my brother?
Not much, man. It is.
I really love doing this again. You know, I don't know why I waited so long. Like, when was the first call? How long ago did we dissolve that? It's been at least 3 or 4 years, right?
It's been at least a couple. I lost track. But I'll tell you what, I do remember, like I said in the last episode, like sitting back doing my blue collar job. I haven't been there for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been at least that, you know. So.
Oh, wow.
It's been a while. Yeah.
It's been a hot minute. And I was really looking to get back. I love doing it. So I'm glad we have this opportunity. I really am.
Well, listen, I got so much good feedback because there was a lot of people that missed you, A, but B, and this is what surprised me, there was a lot of people who didn't know who you were.
So people who were tuning into your other podcasts.
Yes.
And then just tuned into the new podcast and was like, who's this guy?
Yeah. And people were like, I don't know this guy, but I like him and I want to get to know him, basically.
See, this is why, part of the reason I wanted to come back and do this, because I knew there had to be a whole new crop of people, a whole new generation coming up that maybe didn't see Raising the Bar and maybe hadn't heard of the first call out or Pulsing Radio, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm hitting them too. You know, it's great.
That's right, because I forgot about that. Carl Lenore mentioned it on one of the Facebook threads the other day, Pulsing Radio. That was a show you did with Aaron Singerman.
It really was. And it's so funny that he mentioned that, because just the day before I had stumbled upon an old episode of Pulsing Radio. And I was listening to it.
No way.
On the computer. I swear to God. And then the very next day, Carl brings it up and I was like, yes, that can't possibly happen. What are the odds of that?
That is so good. I remember that show, but that was like a shorter one. That didn't have like the staying power of First Call Out.
No, what did, man? The First Call Out lasted a long time. It was just too damn good.
So did we like, because I know we stopped the show like a little ways in and I was like, wait a second, maybe we should reintroduce Dave to everybody just in case there's a couple people that didn't know who he was. But did we do a good job with that?
I don't know. I think we might have done a shitty job with it, actually.
We just
started the show like assuming that the whole world knows who Dave Pulsinella is.
Right.
Then
right.
About 10 minutes in, we're like, hey, wait a minute. You know, you're not the president of the United States. You're just Dave Pulsinella. So maybe we might want to tell people who the fuck you are.
Well, let's do that. Let's do that for.
All right. Well, I don't want to tell people who I am. You tell people who I am.
Well, considering that
who am I?
Okay, listen. Now, first of all, and this is what I said before. Like, I found Raising the Bar, which was a documentary film that turned into Raising the Bar 2, 3, and then Mike eventually came out with 4.
Yeah, 4, exactly.
I found these films. I found these DVDs. This is like back when I first started bodybuilding and getting into competing. And I might have even been like getting ready for my first show when I found it. And
good timing.
Oh, perfect timing, man. And there was nothing out there like it, because it was a documentary film by Mike Pulsinella, your brother, who basically he wanted to follow you around and just kind of like document what your prep was like to try to share that with the family and stuff. Right.
That's it. That's it. It was a personal project of his to follow me around. He had just taken up, you know, videography. He had this little pocket camcorder that he was using and using this little editing software that he had done. And so he said, let me just follow you around while you prepare for your comeback in 2003 for the Delaware State East Coast Classic. And then I'll put together something that'll be really cute and, you know, set it to music. And then the family can see what it is that you do finally. Because they had no idea. So it was just going to be for the family and maybe some friends.
Like, so you know what blows me away? Because so that got big. That got really popular.
Huge, yeah.
And I think it was, what was great about it was it wasn't just the service stuff. Like we were talking about on the last episode, you had the Matsuro videos, which were just like real time watching Ronnie Coleman cook eggs and eat it out back. But,
and it's funny you bring that up because I've been watching a lot of Mitz's stuff lately.
Have you?
And I really have been about Ronnie, most prominently Ronnie. But you're right. I'm thinking to myself, shit, this is what existed before Mike came along.
Yeah.
No wonder it was so well received. I'm thinking this is awful. And I'm a huge fan of the sport of bodybuilding. But seriously, like there was a scene. I'm like, Mitz, really? There's a scene of Ronnie washing his frying pan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm in like real time, like the entire washing of his frying pan and his plate. I'm like, do we really need to see that?
It's like real time eating. There's like real time eating food, like just sitting there with a big bowl of grits and eggs mixed together in front of the TV for like 10 minutes.
Zero editing.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, no one, Mike had nothing like that had ever been done.
Yeah.
Nothing even like it. So, of course, it was well received.
He raised the bar, basically.
He raised the bar by raising the bar with raising the bar.
But it was set pretty low, I guess. So he came in a great time. He could do something like really cool, and it looked even better then, you know?
It's the truth. There was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. We just didn't have much competition. But that was that.
You know what, too, though? Here's the thing. You couldn't do that, in my opinion, with just anybody. Because first of all, and now I've had Mike on Advice's radio shows. So if you guys haven't heard him, please go back. Check it out. I actually had him on right after Raising the Bar 4 came out.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I'm telling the audience now, too. And I've had Mike on a couple times, I think. But here's the thing, too, that I really want the audience to know, the listeners here, is that if you don't know who Mike or who Dave, I'm getting you too confused now. If you don't know who Dave is,
I hate when that happens all the time.
You mentioned that on the last one.
I hate that. People come up, hey, Mike, I'm goddamn Dave.
The deal is that you were open to showing the rough stuff, the hard stuff.
I didn't care.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
and what made it easy though, Scott, was the fact that after a while, the camera disappears. It really does. And you become completely unaware of its existence. And I honestly, I didn't care if people saw my relationship breaking up or me in the hospital or you know, me tearing my hamstring or me crying about something or losing or whatever. It didn't matter to me for some reason. Now, when Mike says, and he always says this to this day, he says, I was completely spoiled by you. See, I did those documentaries with you as the subject, Dave. And I thought that I would go out into the world and there'd be a whole bunch of Daves to be had. He goes, there aren't. He goes, people try to, they protect their ego. They will only let me film certain things.
Yeah.
If they're going through hard times, they don't tell me about it because they don't want me there filming it. So the things that would be most interesting end up being left out. And they end up being just egotistical fluff pieces. He goes, nobody really let me in like you did. He says that to me all the time.
You got it.
And maybe part of it was just because I got it from the beginning. And I think maybe it had to do with the comfort level because it's my brother.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, like out the gate. But I mean, he's done some good pieces, I think, since then. You know, he did, what was the name of the Kai Greene piece that he did?
It was Overkill and Redemption.
Okay, yeah. So he did some really cool stuff with Kai Greene. And he even brings in like the psychology of making a film into his films, which I enjoy sure that thing. A lot, you know?
Absolutely. But a little known thing was with the Kai movies, the first one that he did, they really shut him out. They didn't want him there. They didn't know who he was. They didn't want their personal space intruded. So he had very, very little to work with footage-wise at the end of that filming, and he had to piece something together. Then when Kai and Oscar saw it, they're like, oh, I get it. That's what you were trying to do. Sorry, dude. And they let him in for the second one for Redemption. So he ended up with a lot more good footage.
That's pretty cool, man. So, yeah, so and that brings us, you know, forward to here. And I mean, what are we going to do? Like we said last week, we've got a bunch of questions and we could talk about basically anything. I think now that we're just doing the audio format, we decided that this is really what we wanted to do from the beginning was a radio podcast. I feel like we've got more freedom. It doesn't have to be a 20-minute show. We can do whatever the fuck we want. We can add music.
I think you needed to hear that. You needed to hear me say that. You're like, you know, I'm trying to keep it within that. No. Try to, and maybe people will lose interest. People will only lose interest if you're not interesting.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line. So, I mean, as long as we're flowing, and we just do, we just flow, we're just going to flow with it. Here's a question for you real quick.
Yeah.
So you discovered Raising the Bar when you were getting ready for your show.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Did it help your prep, and how?
Oh, fuck yeah, it did. Well, first of all, I knew which six foods I needed to eat to get ripped.
That's great.
No, it helped a lot because, nobody asked me how did it help? Well, here's the thing. Okay, so it gave me somebody that I could identify with. Because before that, I didn't have somebody, like, I could identify with that and I could feel like, you know, I'm going through this kind of thing and this is hard, but this is how I could look to you and look at how you handled yourself, really, you know, and I could translate that into my own circumstances.
Absolutely. So, and it's not like watching a film about the genetically elite guy that you really can't relate to on any level. Yeah. I mean, you like watching him, you're like looking at his amazing physique and the big lumps on his body that you can never achieve. But on some level, you can't actually relate to that person. Like, I can't relate to Kai Greene in on that level.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never look like that. And you know that. But here's a guy who's just had a regular body trying to turn it into a national level competitor or a pro card, you know? So I guess maybe on that level, it resonated with you perhaps.
Yes, that you had a regular, I'll say, like, you were a regular person, but I would argue that your genetics are probably pretty decent, man. Like, I don't know if you could do that if they weren't, and I'm not going to say like Kai Greene genetics, but you listen, you know, and we talked about this when you were on Muscle Minds with Scott Stevenson and I. We said, like, you really, in today's standards, you would have been pro, but it was a lot harder then.
It was. I would have actually had 3 pro cards by today's standards, which I try not to dwell on. But you're not the first person to say that to me. You're not the first person to say, Dave, you sell yourself short with the whole genetics thing and thinking that your genetics totally sucked, which they really didn't. They tell me you couldn't have done what you did.
Yeah,
exactly that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't create something out of nothing. So you had to have something to begin with. And maybe they're right. Maybe I just thought I had bad genetics because I started bodybuilding when I was 12 and I was still, you know what I mean? And I was still a twig, but of course I hadn't hit puberty yet.
Yeah.
So I used that as my frame of reference, which is probably not a great idea.
Well, I mean, we can look at the rest of your family. You know, I've seen, you know, I look at Mike. I mean, he's from the same genetic pool. So, I mean, it's to say that you could have been more like Mike, who's like more of a stand. Well, he's gotten in pretty good shape. Is he still lifting now?
That's the thing. When Mike puts his mind to it for like 12 weeks,
yeah,
he develops a really decent physique on him. My father, when he was, you know, in his teens, looked like, kind of like Steve Reeves. So maybe my genetics don't suck. And maybe, and I'm just going to put this out there, maybe if I had actually believed that I had better genetics than I thought I did, maybe I wouldn't have had this subconscious thing where I may have held myself back from being everything I could have been. That's something to explore, isn't it?
Have you thought of that before, or did you just think of that
never
now?
Never.
You're kidding moment. Me. No fucking way.
Not until this very moment. Had I actually believed that I had good genetics, could I have gone further in this sport? Or did I create this thing
limitation
that didn't need to exist, this limitation that didn't need to exist?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Well, hey, listen, it might not change anything for you, but it could change something for somebody listening right now, you know?
And that would be very well worth me bringing it up right now if that does happen.
Yeah.
Interesting. I never thought about that before in my life.
Plus, it gives me an opportunity to say, you should have been pro, dude.
Dude, yeah, I demand my 3 pro cards.
Yeah.
They should give me an honorary pro card now.
Did you follow Nationals? It just happened a week or so ago.
I didn't really. I was aware that they were happening, but I didn't follow them. And I also know that Hunter won. That's what I know.
He looked good.
That's all I know. I saw some pictures, and he's good. He's not great, and I'll tell you this, and I think you'll agree.
What's that?
He's got a lot of potential, right?
Okay.
But you take that exact physique, and you put it in the 95, 96, 97 Nationals, and what do you think would happen? I'll put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question.
He's not winning the overall back then.
But it does say a lot about what bodybuilding was at that time. But
it just does.
But it you just know, does. I don't know, man. Maybe things would have been different. Maybe he would have been different then. It was a different era. But he did do. I mean, he did look above and beyond a lot of what showed up. And that's not taking anything away from anybody else, because there were some great competitors there.
I'm not saying that's not the case. He obviously deserved to win.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the physiques in the 90s, I was watching some of the old shows, you know?
Yeah.
The graininess, the fullness while still maintaining the tiny waist and being able to do vacuums and shit like that. And I hate to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but come on.
Back you know, in my day.
You know, oh, these kids these days. But you know, most of the people at that show, they have a film of water over them, or they're not, they haven't done all of their fat loss homework yet. You know, they're going in with a little film of bullshit over them, and it's just too... It's too prevalent. It's just too damn prevalent. And I was looking at Hunter's physique, and I'm thinking, he looks great. He's proportioned. But he's got that layer. He didn't have, like, striations on his striations. You couldn't see, like, the blood flowing through his blood vessels. He didn't have cellophane skin.
Yeah, that is true.
And coming from the era that I did, you had to have that, or you weren't winning shit.
That was such a cool look, too.
The one thing I knew I was going to bring, no matter what, and I wasn't the biggest guy, or I might not be the shapeliest guy, I might not have the bubbliest muscles or the longest muscle bellies, but one thing I'm going to be is see-through. I'm going to be a human x-ray.
Yeah.
I will show up looking like that, and no one's going to be harder than me, because I do have control of that. And so does everyone else. But you just don't see, it's not brought these days. I don't know why, and we don't have to get into it, but I don't know, that's just what I saw. He's got the Labrada genetics, though.
Yeah, he does for sure. Hey, this is going to be like a total topic shift. It's still Raising the Bar related, though. So I watched this new documentary film. I sent you a little 5-second clip of it. I watched this last night. It's called Quest of the Muscle Nerd.
Dude, what is that? I just couldn't stop watching that clip over and over again.
Okay, so here's the deal. There are guys... And they're definitely like nerdy guys that they're into comics and stuff, first of all. And they're into like cosplay, as they call it, like dressing up in those costumes and going to the Comic Con and all that. Well, there's like a subgroup of nerds within the nerds that have gotten into bodybuilding. And it's bodybuilding for costuming. And that's what they're doing. And so they put a costume together. They get as jacked as they can. And then they get on stage and compete against one another. And they do kind of like a little dance and some poses and stuff.
Oh, man. What is happening? This isn't happening. When did this start?
This is new. And the guy who... So here's the deal. The guy who sent it to me is the guy who made the film. And he's into this stuff. And I met him a couple of years ago. It's been a few years. Right when I started Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, at about the same time, he started something called Muscle Nerds, which is a comic spelled with a Z. And he said he was into this. I was like, huh, that's kind of weird. And now that I see it, now that I watch this documentary, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. It's kind of cool. But what shocked me, what surprised me is, so they brought together a panel of four guest judges, and these were the people. These people got dressed up in their own costumes, and
that's the part you sent me. Right?
Yes, yeah. There's one of them is your former training partner from Raising the Bar One, now IFBB Pro, Victor Del Campo.
Why does this not surprise me? It just doesn't. When you sent me that, I was like, you know what? This is perfect, because he's already done the gay porn. You know that, right?
I didn't know that.
Well, now you know it. And I'm pretty sure I mentioned that on my old podcast. I'm pretty sure I mentioned that. I don't see why I wouldn't mention that. Did you listen to every episode?
I listened to, listen, this is how bad I am, or bad I was, with podcasts. There would only be so many shows that came out each week, by like Saturday or Sunday, I was well out of them, and I'd be like listening to the show again. So, I may have heard it twice, but it's been a few years.
You didn't miss the Sam episode either. I'm sure the Sam episode resonates with you as it does with everybody. You know what I'm talking about.
You would have to remind me, Sam. You would have to remind me.
Well, I'm not going to. I swear to you, this isn't the first call. This is not the place for this.
Yeah, you'd have to remind me of that one another time. Another time.
We'll talk about it off the air.
Oh, okay.
It's probably the most outrageous story I ever told on that show.
I'm sure I'd probably remember, but
Victor. I know you'd remember. But anyway, yeah, he's done not gay porn, but you know, like muscle worship stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's so kind of on the edge.
Yeah. So now that just doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Here's the thing about Victor.
Yeah.
He was always willing to do whatever, very open minded to do whatever he had to do. On the outskirts of bodybuilding, short of doing sessions, which I don't know, he may have done those too, but to make some money, because God knows the IFBB is not going to do it.
No, of course not.
So you got to make it in peripheral ways, and that's what a lot of people do. It's a shame. It's a shame. It really is.
I think he's into this thing though. Like I think he enjoys it.
Well, that doesn't surprise me either. So what exactly does he do on this thing?
He's only in it for a few minutes. I did. Yeah, he's only in it for a few minutes, and he comes in. They dress him. He dresses up like Wolverine. That's his costume. And he hits a few poses on stage, and then he gives his feedback on the show. They showed him like in the hotel getting his costume on, and they were like cutting his t-shirt up and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't cut the shirt down too low, and he pointed by his obliques. He was like, I'm a little self-conscious of that area. But they reassured him. They're like, dude, you're an IFBB pro. You look better than anybody who's going to be there. And then he's like, okay. And then they just ripped the shirt all the way down.
You know, it's kind of, it's a little sad that an IFBB pro is doing this for money. I got to tell you, you know, the IFBB pro and what it used to mean to me, this is a little aside right now, and what that used to mean to me and what it means to me now. And I have to tell you, the general public, I don't know if I told you this story about what happened recently at a bar with an IFBB pro friend of mine.
No.
Okay. A friend of mine who is an IFBB pro and I were sitting at a bar.
Male or female?
It was a male IFBB pro.
Okay.
And he says to me, he goes, you know, it's not like it used to be, Dave. You know, back in the day, it meant something to be a pro.
So he'd been around for a while. He's been around.
Oh, he's been around as long as I have. Yeah.
Okay.
And he goes, I don't know why he's anonymous in this story. I can tell.
Oh,
tell
his okay.
name. But anyway, so he goes.
Well, what's his name then?
I'll tell you at the end.
Okay.
he goes, it's just not like it used to be.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, the general public, they don't even know what an IFBB pro is.
No, they don't.
I said, are you sure? He goes, look, I'm going to prove it. And he turns to the bartender and he says to her, he says, excuse me, do you know what an IFBB pro is?
Yeah.
And she goes, It's a blender. No, it's a washing machine. And he turns to me and he goes, I rest my case.
That's what she said. It's a blender. It's a washing machine.
He said, it's a blender. No, it's a washing machine.
I get her logic, though. It kind of, I could see that. I
IFBB
bought the new
Pro.
Yeah, the new IFBB Pro Series 2.
Buy the IFBB Pro Series 2. And if you act now, you get the exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was Rich Siegelman.
Okay, no kidding.
Yeah, it was great. Good friend of mine.
Yeah, so, but I was surprised by that because Victor was your training partner in Raising the Bar 1. I remember you mentioning that he wasn't like your favorite training partner ever.
I'll be honest, no, it's crazy and it's so sad, but that the filming of Raising the Bar 1, which I know obviously I wanted everything to be spot on and perfect, I had the worst collection of training partners ever in the history of my trading career.
Yeah.
During that period of time, they just weren't available. Good people weren't available, and great training partners that I had in the past, you know, had either moved to Florida. Mm. One was in this place. One was in that place. One wasn't training anymore. Yeah. The one was this, that, the other thing. Where I had kids, and you know, can't do it, and can't meet me. Where their schedules dropped, and so I had what I had. So I had what Adam. Right? And Victor. Now, Al Krakowiak, who was also in Raising the Bar 1, 2, and 3, was a great training partner.
Al reminds me of a friend of mine, Rick, who coached me for my first show. Just the way he talked to you, he was like my Al.
he was great, and but he was only available, I think, on weekends. So during the week, I had to train with Victor and Adam.
Okay.
And that's just the way it was. And, you know, I had grown up in the sport training in a basement, in a cold basement with spider webs. And, you know, it just didn't matter to me. Yeah. I don't require, you know, anyone to supply me with energy or to slap me on the back or to kick me in the ass or to yell at me. I don't require that. Basically, a partner for me was for a spot.
Okay.
Just to give me some forced reps or to make sure the 100-pound dumbbells didn't fall on my forehead.
Yeah.
I didn't require them for much other than that. But yeah, that's what I was trained with at the time.
So after raising the bar one, you know, you wanted to bring them all out of the woodwork. Did it get better after that? Like, was the local scene, did you create any kind of fire there?
It's so funny because exactly what I wanted to do happened.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of that because prior to that, the Delaware had gotten really, really crappy. And there was only a few people, but there was a lot of really good national level bodybuilders who had just kind of retired and put their careers on ice for no real reason.
Yeah.
But I knew that they were still at an age where they could come back and be what they were or better. I knew they were out there. They were just sitting idle and not competing in this show. And everyone was saying, well, why are you doing that show? It's just the Delaware.
Yeah.
Just the Delaware. Just the Delaware. And my goal was to say, look, there's all these national level guys who live in Delaware and PA and the outskirts who I would love to spark a fire under their ass and get them in that show.
Yeah.
Get them all in the best shape of their lives, have them all show up and beat them all. And that's exactly what I did. And then the next year I went back to watch. And I swear to God, that stage looked like the Junior Nationals.
Hell yeah. That's so cool.
There were 25 guys in each class, and the quality was there, and it was competitive, and it was amazing. And I said, I did this.
Yeah.
And I was just very proud of that. Now it's back to being small and shitty again. But there was about a good 4 or 5 years when it was actually a really good show to even just go and watch.
Yeah. That's cool, man. It's cool to see that.
Yeah.
So we've got a bunch of questions here. Before we get to that, I want to tell you what turned out to be kind of an embarrassing story at the gym the other day. And I want to get your feedback because I want to know how you would have handled it.
Okay.
Okay. So I was training I've got three gyms that I choose from that when I want to train. But
la-di-da.
There's one it's like 5 minutes from my house. It's a Crunch Fitness. It's basically like Planet Fitness, but they don't restrict you from like making noise, lifting weights or whatever. and they have like some better stuff. It's, you know, the dumbbells go to 130 and it's okay. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. And it's 5 minutes from my house. So if I'm doing a lot of podcasting or whatever, and I'm busy, I can go there. Or when I'm doing AM fasted cardio, I can go there instead of my other gym is 20, 25 minutes away.
Gotcha.
I'm walking out and I thought, you know what? I'm going to think I'm going to tan. Said I'm going to do some tanning, get in there for 5 minutes. I didn't bring my goggles with me, though. And I knew that sometimes they ask you, like, can we see your goggles, please? And if you don't have them,
they really?
They do, yeah. Because they
actually care about your eyeballs, huh?
Well, I think they care about selling the goggles to you. That's
that,
what it is.
That would make a lot more sense, yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's some, like, restrictions. Like, they want to, you know, by law type thing. Anyway, I get up there, and the girl, the woman, she's the gym manager, she's standing there with this maybe 20-year-old kid. And he's got this nervous smile on his face. And she says, okay, sure, we can get your tanning going. You know what? She scanned my pass. And she said, you know what? You haven't done your kickoff session yet. I was like, my kickoff?
What is that?
And I think I started knowing where she was going with this immediately. And I was like, kickoff, what's the kickoff? And she was like, it's your training session. We can get you actually scheduled right now. And Timmy here will put you through a training session.
Oh no! Shut up! Stop right now, please stop. I'm already getting uncomfortable.
I was getting uncomfortable because then I'm thinking to myself like I don't know, like I don't want to be mean, I don't want to be rude, you know, to this kid.
Dude, what's this kid look like?
I mean, he actually had a little bit of muscle. Like he didn't look bad. Yeah, yeah, he looked like for 20-year-old kids that probably don't really eat, or don't know what a bodybuilding diet is. But maybe he gets some like Optimum Nutrition gold standard protein in now and then. he looked okay, you know, and he, you know, in another few years he might actually build a physique. But it, right now, he this was, and also I go there all the time for cardio. I've never seen him before, so I think he's a brand new trainer too.
And they're trying to give him some action.
Exactly, right? Exactly. And I'm trying to think of a reason. I was like, no, that's okay. I'm not interested. Thanks. And I'm already kind of a little nervous because I thought they might ask me about the goggles. Remember that, you know? So I'm
kind of
a little like, I don't want to have to deal with that. And then they're like, she started pushing me. She's like, well, why don't you want to do it? And I was like, well, you know, and she's like, cause I mean, you could walk out anytime. You just give them 10 minutes. And if you don't like how it's going, you can just walk right out of the session give it a try. And I was like, well, finally, like I just said, cause I didn't want to be rude and everything. I just said, and this was like the douchiest thing I could have possibly come up with. I was like, well, I'm a coach.
I think that's far from the douchiest thing you could have said, actually.
Well,
matter of fact, I think that's really, really politically correct of you and very polite of you. Because let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What do you look like? What do you look like right now?
I'm 210. I'm not fat by normal people's standards, but I'm not lean by our standards.
Well, what were you wearing?
I was covered up. You know,
I mean, you're a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Was there evidence of that showing through your clothing?
I would guess. I don't see it myself. You know what I mean? But I people comment. Ooh. You know what I mean? People are like, hey, there's a big guy over there. You know, so I think it's noticeable. I think. I hope.
Honestly, I think saying I'm a coach is really, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. My response would have been way worse than that.
Well, wait a second, because here's
way more harsh than that.
Here's my reasoning, though, is I feel like, first of all, okay, and here's her response. She was like, well, that's okay. I'm a coach, too. It doesn't mean that you can't learn from other people.
Oh, my God. Now, at that point, you have to say, what the fuck am I going to learn from this child who, when I first started bodybuilding, was an embryo?
Right.
You got to give me a break. I've forgotten more than he knows or will ever know. See, that's what I would have said.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's,
sorry.
I said, you know, I'm sorry. I don't want to be offensive by it. I was like real apologetic at that point. Christ. I was just so uncomfortable, Dave.
I think she should have shut the hell up. And you know what? And the other thing the problem I have with that is that they pitch that to anybody. Like I swear to God, Nasser El-Sombati could come in there, and if he wasn't dead, and they would pitch it to him. You know, or Big Ramy. Oh, would you like to take advantage of our first workout?
I would love to hear what Nasser had to say to that. That'd be funny.
It'd be great, wouldn't it? But they don't discriminate. Like they'll pitch it to anybody. It's like,
yeah.
Come on, give the guy. They should have given you some credit for looking like you know your way around a gym, and not assuming that this kid, this child, he's 20.
Yeah,
your eyes 10 years ago, when I was 43, he was 10. I was retiring from competitive bodybuilding, and he was being 10 somewhere.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to take you up on your workout today. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I would have said.
I just think also, though, like everybody's a coach nowadays, you know? And mm-hmm. I felt like I fell into that.
And she said, I'm a coach. I wonder what her credentials really are.
Yeah. Well, she's a coach too, though. And like,
oh, everyone's a coach.
You know? Yeah. So it's like, and I felt like that guy, like, oh, we're all coaches, you know?
Oh, Scott. Yeah, exactly. So on that level, you probably felt it was douchey.
That's where I
everyone's a coach, but you weren't being rude if that's what you meant.
Okay. Yeah.
No way. Dude, can I take a piss?
Yeah.
Okay.
Guys, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be right back. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy. Not being scared if you never please me.
All right, guys, and we are back. The pulse of bodybuilding and fitness. Dave, that's a lot of words.
Post-pH. Dude, I have the bladder of a pregnant woman. I swear to God. I pee like 17 times a night now.
Do you still carry a gallon jug around with you?
Yeah, is that bad?
No, I just was wondering how bro you still were.
Dude, there's a lot of things that I just can't break the habit of. For instance, carrying a jug of water. It needs to be empty by the end of the day. But, you know, I'm glad I do that because it's a really healthy habit to be in.
Yeah.
And I still shave my body. I'm going to be 54 next week. And I still shave. My entire body has to be smooth. And then I put lotion on. It has to be cement. I still do that. Who does that?
It's a lot of work is what that is.
It's a lot of work. I have to do it at least twice a week.
Oh, yeah.
And I need like a quadruple blade. It's horrible maintenance. It's amazing. But I still do that. And I just can't stand my body with hair on it. And I've been doing that since I was 19. I remember the first time I did it and then decided not to let it grow back.
You probably have like very well exfoliated skin.
I do. In fact, I think it keeps me young because I'm constantly scraping off those dead cells.
Yes. Yes. One other thing was that, one of the things that people weren't prepared for, people who didn't know you, was the anal sex question.
Oh, shit. Really? What happened?
Oh, just I had a couple people reach out to me and they were like, oh, because normally, like, at Advices Radio, we keep it pretty clean. Like, nobody's really first call out, you guys got out there sometimes. You guys told some stories.
Yeah. Like, the anal question was, like, a 5 on the scale of 1 to...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like...
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. On a scale of 1 to 100.
Exactly. So, yeah. But did it throw people?
Well, honestly, I'll tell you the truth. It threw me a little bit. Somebody mentioned that. They're like, yeah, you looked a little thrown by that.
Dude, you really did. I felt bad because it was like, I know he's not Matt Minerod, but Jesus Christ, I didn't think he would be like, you almost shut down. Oh, I felt so bad.
Yeah, no, I wasn't shut down, but I was like, I noticed it. I was like, oh man, how do I, because I never talk about stuff like that on the show.
Wait a minute. You knew the question was coming up. You read it. It was on a piece of paper. You had time to mentally prepare and wrap your head around this. What the hell happened?
I didn't have time to prepare for you to turn the question on me.
Oh, it was that part that got you.
Yes.
I was like, hey, Scott, what do you think about it?
I was like, it's good.
I don't. Yeah. I try not to.
I didn't re-listen to it, but from what I was told, I just changed the subject. I was like, it's good. And then I changed the subject really quick.
Dude, that's fucking great. So what the people, were they offended?
I don't think so. No. No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because
if they were, I'll give them more of that shit. That's how I roll. I'm not gonna shut down production. But I don't think there's any. I don't think we have any dirty questions this week.
So. Okay. Well, then we'll keep it clean. I can skate through.
There'll be no penis vagina talk this week.
Well, now that we said this though.
Right, we did.
Yeah, yeah, now it's going to be like tenfold next week.
It's out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We really dug ourselves that hole.
So I'm over at Facebook. I'm on your page. You posted a thread with that picture that we put together of you in those 90s spandex shorts with the stripes on them. Yeah, and you're fucking jacked too, dude.
That picture was about 6 weeks before my very last competition, which was the 2007 North American. So it was after an arm workout. I had those shorts on. We went out into the parking lot of the gym where I was training. And Al Krakowiak took about 10 pictures, and that was one of them.
Nice.
It's a good shot, isn't it, with the arms extended like that?
Yeah, it works. It works.
I like that shot. My abs were just like, they were ridiculous.
They looked good. Yeah.
And that was 6 weeks out, so imagine I got a lot harder between that and the show.
The bicep vascularity, that's what really sells me on that picture. But
yeah, but it's just on one arm, though. Have you ever noticed that about my body?
I'm looking at that right now.
That freaky vascularity is only on my right arm, I think.
Yeah. Huh.
Yep. The left one has none.
Yeah, it's got some. It's just a little further down.
Just all, yeah, it's true. All my vascularity just ended up on the right arm. I guess there's more, it requires more blood for some reason. I don't know.
But point being, though, that thread, that was a thread you posted to ask for new questions. And
correct.
That's how we're going to roll here is that when we're going to do a working. Show. Yeah. We'll just post a thread up and we'll gather them from your Facebook. Starting us out, we have one from Dan Byers. Mm-hmm. He says, what are your thoughts on blood flow restriction training?
Dan Byers is an internet client of mine who I've been working with actually for a couple of years now and has made amazing progress. I swear to God, he looked like a regular dude.
No kidding.
And now, I'm not saying you put him on stage, but he's got like a detailed back. He's got six pack of abs. He's just like a regular guy with a regular job and a regular life and regular life. But he actually looks like, and it gets better all the time. And he's just a great example of someone who's just a regular person who's just listening to me and just does what's on the paper. Hmm. And it's not even someone I have actual human contact with. If you think about it,
yeah,
it's all via text. Yeah. It's all by text.
You work through text, huh?
With my internet clients, I work through text and email.
Okay.
And it works great. Sometimes if we need to, like if they're a competitor, we'll do Skype.
Okay.
So I can actually have them do their quarter turns and things like that. But it's funny he asked that question, like it's a new thing. You realize that we call it occlusion training now?
Yes.
Where you cut off the blood supply and then you get the hold of it. That was around in the 50s.
Was it
and
really?
The reason I know that, I wasn't alive in the 50s. But my father was, who was a bodybuilder in the 50s and 60s, right? And he said they used to put rubber bands around their arm and do their biceps and triceps with the rubber band around their arm. And I actually tried it and it really worked, but it made my arms big and shapeless. I didn't like the effect it had, but it really does work. It just brings a lot of blood in there. It brings nutrients in there and it holds it in there. Kind of like a cock ring would with your penis. Sorry to bring up the sex. You're going to get calls about this. Sorry. I don't mind. I'm not getting the calls. You are. But yeah, I mean, it's been around for forever. Like I say, there's nothing new under the sun. There really isn't. Everything's just recycled from whenever.
But do you like it?
Makes its resurgence again. I didn't like it for myself. I didn't like the way it made my arms look. It changed, for some reason, the shape of them. It just made them like tubular and big.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know how. I can't explain it scientifically. I just didn't like it. Plus, it really kind of hurts. It's really uncomfortable feeling to have all that blood stopped up in there. And I just don't think it's healthy for the valves in the blood vessels. Mm. I don't like it. So for that reason, I'm out.
Now, how long did you try it for?
One workout. No, I'm just kidding. I actually did it for several months.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I do think I might have put a little size on my arm. Huh. But I just didn't like the way they looked. And maybe I was just getting fat. Maybe I should probably conduct the experiment again under more controlled circumstances. But I was 17 at the time.
Yeah.
So who knows what the hell I was eating? Probably cheesesteaks and shit like that.
Okay. I don't know. My arms are looking softer. It must be the occlusion.
It's the occlusion training, not the steakums.
right.
So good question, though, Dan. Good question, Dan.
Sometime I want to ask you about your deli meat story at some point in the future. It's an old story, but I want to hear it again sometime.
I'll retell it anytime. It's a good one.
All right. We got one from Matt McCartney. He says, how do you know of any bodybuilders who have fried their balls from years of gear and can no longer make babies? Alternatively, do you know of anyone who has successfully recovered their nuts and got their partners pregnant?
Well, first of all, I love how this guy thinks I have intimate knowledge of every bodybuilder's nutsack somehow. Like, for some reason, I know, you know, their ball situation.
Yeah.
I don't. But I do know enough about it to say this.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. Arnold has kids. Lou Ferrigno has kids.
Yeah.
So obviously they recovered. And I'll tell you this. I'm going to tell you a pretty cool story. Probably more of a first call out story, but I'm going to tell it anyway.
All right. Let's hear it.
I'll let you deal with the consequences. So I was at a house party in the early 90s, I think it was. My friend Timmy was there And Timmy is a biology major. He was a biology major at the time, and an entomologist and a scientist. And he actually had bought a new electron microscope. And for some reason, he brought it to this house party. So here he is at this house party with a microscope. And he came up with a brilliant idea for some reason, because I guess I was mid-cycle at the time.
It's pretty nerdy, by the way.
It was very nerdy. He is the coolest nerd you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
But he came up with this idea because I was in mid-cycle, so I probably on like three or four different compounds at the time. I was getting ready for a show. And he said, let's look at your semen.
Oh, God.
And let's see what's in there.
Was he like, come with me in this room privately and I'll get that.
it didn't go down that way. I swear to God, it didn't. But I did produce a sample.
You're kidding.
I won't tell you how, because that would be, we'd be the third call out if we did that. But I did produce a sample, and we put it under on a slide, right? And we put it under there, and there was plenty of activity. There was a lot of activity. I'll tell you this right now. I was on four different things, and that was back in the 90s when all the shit was real. So everything I was getting was from a prescription and from a doctor and from a pharmacy. So everything was real. And there were, now I'm not going to say they were all healthy looking. Like some had two heads and were swimming in circles, but there was a lot of activity in there. So I'm going to tell you, it's no safeguard. A lot of people like to think, well, I'm on gear. I'm not going to get you pregnant. Open your legs, baby. I'm on test. It doesn't really work that way, because I've known a few guys who have gotten their girls knocked up while they're on a cycle.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you this. That night at that house party, I had sperm swimming in there. Mm-hmm. And I was on Deca. I was on probably D-ball at the time, and a couple other compounds. EQ, real EQ from a horse farm. That's where I used to get it.
No kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was it like 50 milligrams?
Dude, it was amazing. Listen to this hookup.
Yeah.
I had this girl I worked with at Holiday Spa, right?
Okay.
And she had this huge crush on me. And she worked at a horse farm. And she goes, I don't know, I see these bricks of this stuff. One's called Windstraw. And there's another one called Equipoise. I was like, what?
Interesting.
She goes, yeah, there's a huge closet full of them. I'll grab some for you if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
So she grabbed me. Dude, she brought me back a brick of Winstraw, Winnie V, the skim milk looking shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the EQ in a brick of 25 bottles.
Holy crap. Each. Now, but what was the EQ dosed at? That's what I want to know.
God damn if I remember. It was like 1991, dude.
Because I remember.
Either 50 or 100.
I was going to say it's usually pretty low, right, for horses?
Mm-hmm. It was. So what I would do is I would take the amount that you would give a horse.
Yeah.
And I would double it. I'm just kidding. No, but she had this little crush on me. So she wanted to please me. She wanted to make me happy. So she would go in there, risk her job, and steal bricks of fucking Winnie and bricks of EQ and bring them back to me. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And that's when I was making so much progress. Because not only was I getting that, but I had a doctor who was writing me prescriptions for Syntex Anadrol.
No kidding.
The original Syntex Anadrol at 50 milligrams. And I swear to you, as I live and breathe, I put 35 pounds on in a month when I started that.
Holy crap.
I'll never forget it. Yeah, those were the days, man. You can get real shit. It's not around anymore.
Yeah, see, you're a little older than me. Like back when the steroid act happened, I was still a kid, basically, back then. So I missed out.
Worst thing. You really did, because there were doctors who would still prescribe it. I remember Dr. Revito. He lived in this little mansion. He was a little old man. He was retired. But what he would do is he had an interest in bodybuilding and bodybuilders, and he would help all the kids in the neighborhood. He wanted to make sure that they were doing it right, so he would guide them with dosages and everything.
No kidding.
He would show up at his house, and he would say, okay, what do you want this time? How many milligrams? I'll write it out. He wrote it out. He wrote me scripts for Deca. He wrote me scripts for Anadrol. He wrote me scripts for Cipionate.
Wow.
And I would go to the pharmacy. They wouldn't blink an eye, and they would fill it.
Wow. What were the prices like on that?
It wasn't illegal. It was cheap.
Wow.
Dude, I'm telling you, it was the golden age. And to be honest with you, if you think about it, it's fucking safer.
Way
than
safer.
It is now. You knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
Now you go out and it may be it may be 200 milligrams. It may not be. It may be what's the label reads. It might not be. It could be something completely different. It could be just some inert oil. You just don't know. So you're playing really Russian roulette. So like anything else that they make illegal, all it does is it drives it underground.
Yeah.
And the same people who would have used it legally are going to use it illegally. Only now you don't know what you're getting. It's a shame. It really is.
Yeah. When you put it that way, man, I mean, geez, just how much easier that would be just on your health and legally. That was a good time.
Dude, I knew exactly how many milligrams of what I had in my system at any given time.
Yeah.
If I wanted to adjust it, make an adjustment from this to that and you can get real Ativar, by the way, and you can get real Primaball. And I'll tell you this, that stuff worked amazingly at getting you shredded. You didn't have to really even diet, and you lost the fat. And I really think that's a huge reason for the quality of the 1990s bodybuilders.
It's weird.
I do, because
I was just going to say, it's weird because you would think there would still be like, okay, yeah, there's going to be some stuff that's going to be cut or the quality isn't going to be great. But you'd think there would be some really good stuff like that out there. You know what I mean? On par?
There still? Is, but for every one lab, quote unquote, that you can find that is producing decent shit, there are 100 underground labs that are just pure shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awful. And you have to have an inside scoop on what's what and who's who to know what to get.
Yeah,
and who to get
true.
From. Yeah, it's awful. So I feel bad for the guys who are starting off who have no real connections and have no real frame of reference, and they have to go online and just play Russian roulette with their lives.
Whew, yeah. All right. We've got one from CJ Krakowski. He asked, and then he asked his question very briefly, but then he came back and he elaborated a little. He says, training with injuries. ... But then he comes back and he says, just a general idea of training with injuries. I have a nagging shoulder that's been bothering me for months, and I'm finally scheduled to get an MRI, but not not until the next month. Frustrating because I can't push with the intensity that I used to, but wondering your general thoughts / mindset of training with nagging injuries. I remember the hamstring in RTB.
Oh, do you?
I remember that too.
I would gladly pay to have that injury now compared to what I've been through in the past 2 years, if you know what I've been through.
Ooh, give us a recap here.
Dude, the last 24 months has seen me with a complete rupture of my right quadricep tendon, followed 6 months later by a complete rupture of my left quadricep tendon, just as the right one was healed. Then I tore my left shoulder. So I had to get surgery on that. So that's 1, 2, 3 surgeries, right? At that point, I said to myself, I said, this has to be over. I had 3 major surgeries, which basically required 1.5 years of downtime. Yeah. So my physique was melting. I couldn't do this or that or the other.
How depressing.
It's extremely depressing. So I said, look, I got one good shoulder left. I said, and I remember saying this to myself, and I'll be goddamned if I didn't make this happen. I said, the only way that I can hurt my fourth limb is if I like fell out of bed directly onto it. And 2 nights later, I fell directly out of bed onto my right shoulder and tore it.
You're kidding me.
I shit you not.
So you didn't do that like in the gym, like pressing the 150s?
No.
Wow.
In fact, I didn't do any of them in the gym. Scott, the first one I did getting out of my chair in my office, I was talking to a client, finishing up a consultation.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, okay, I'll see you next week. And I got up and went, pop! My kneecap rolled to the side. My quad rolled up to my thigh, and I fell onto the floor screaming. I freaked the fuck out of this client. I said, the first thing I'm thinking, go to the front desk, get some ice.
Yeah.
It's nice. She comes back with like a little ice pack, and I'm thinking, I look down at my leg and I see the kneecap's basically on the wrong side of my leg.
Oh, you need a much bigger ice pack.
I said, oh, you know what? It started to sink in. I said, this is gonna require an ambulance and like a stretcher and 3 people to put me on the stretcher.
Jeez.
I said, call 911. So that was the first one. It happened in getting out of a chair. The second one happened on the front porch of a friend's house. I went to go bring them something. I was delivering something to their house, and their dog, which tended to be evil, and I didn't realize how evil this dog was, lunged out the door, lunged onto my pant leg, and started
biting.
And I fell backwards, and that's all it took. So the left one, pop!
Oh my!
Right there on the front porch.
What did the dog do? Like,
well, the dog didn't do anything but keep attacking me, and the owner pulled the.
But it was the you're getting mauled by a dog while you tore your hamstring, basically.
Well, no, my hamstring, my quad.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That I'm another yeah,
another complete rupture of the quad. Yeah. So
that's what I meant.
The ambulance had to come and scoop me off the front porch, and it was awful, just awful. And that happened in Baltimore, so I wasn't even in the state where I lived. So, you know, they took me to the hospital there. Then they had to transport me to Delaware, to Christiana. So it was a horrible, it was a big deal. So that one still hasn't healed right. So I can't really do much with it. So there's that. And then the left shoulder. And then finally, I fall out of bed onto the right shoulder. So if you want to talk about injuries and mom asking about injuries, I can go on for days about how to train around them and what to do, because I've had four major surgeries in 24 months. And I'll tell you, you have to be able to reinvent yourself. You really do. And if you can't, you're just not going to be in the gym. So you can't continue. Like, if you can't do bench presses, don't think that you have to do bench presses to develop your pecs. You just don't. You really don't. And the moment you realize that, look, for everything that I was doing that I can no longer do, there are probably 50 things that I can do that will hit the same muscle group. But I have to be open-minded.
Yeah.
And I have to leave my ego at the door. To be honest with you, my chest, because of both shoulders being torn, my new chest routine, I know I'll never lift a dumbbell again.
Yeah.
I know that. It took me a long time to accept that. But working around injuries means you have to do that which does not further hurt you. My chest routine now consists of two exercises.
That's it.
The chest press machine, the pin selectorized one, you know, and I'll work up to about half the stack and then do drop sets. And I got to be honest with you, it blows my pecs out.
Yeah.
I get a huge pump.
Okay.
And then the second one, I finish off with cable crossovers, sets of 30. I'll do like three or four sets of 30. And I'll be honest with you, my chest gets sore as fuck the next day. It's pumped as hell. I'll never do another incline dumbbell press. I'll never do another dumbbell press. I'll never do a flat bench. I'll never do even the Smith machine incline. I'll never do any of that again. My shoulders are too torn up. But guess what? I can still do those two things. So guess what? I do those.
Yeah. And it's working, right?
It is working. I'm bringing my physique back. I have to realize, though, this is going to work for me because of the muscle I carried. I'm just bringing all that back.
I gotcha.
But with the rest of my body parts, what I do, because I realize how easy it now is to tear things, I've completely adopted a whole new way of doing my reps. If you've ever seen me, which you have, you've seen me working out in Raising the Bar 1, 2, and 3, and I did everything very ballistically.
Yeah.
I put on a lot of weight. My theory back then was heavyweight and high reps, both, you know? So, you know, I'd get on, for instance, leg extension, I'd put the stack on and I would do 50, 60 reps per set, but they were swinging, you know, and using my body, but it really does work the quads in a way that you can't any other way. But now, you know, now I have to get on there. I'll do a 2 second up, 4 second back, like the textbooks taught you in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Which you should have been doing all along. Maybe you didn't have these problems. So you have to go back to the basics. So I do everything like that. Like a very slow cadence, a squeeze at the top, a nice slow negative. And that's how you have to work around these injuries. So to this guy who's asking this question, you know, whatever it is that's hurting you, you got to just do that which does not make it worse. Or you'll end up having to go under the knife, and you just don't want that. So there are exercises. There are ranges of motion that will not hurt you. Find them and stick with them.
That's good. That's really good. I like that advice. That, you know, I've told this story on some of the other shows, but I got to tell you, Dave, because I know you don't know this one. I had this tendonitis in my bicep tendon, in my right bicep. I got to the point, and this is like 2013. I got to the point where, like, for the last 8 weeks of a prep, all I was doing was pec deck. That's literally like all I could do. Right.
Right.
It got, you know, better and it got worse over the years, But it got to the point in the last 2 years, I wasn't able to do any, even I couldn't do barbell for years, put it that way. But I couldn't even do dumbbell anymore. Couldn't even do dumbbell flat bench or incline dumbbell. I went to this therapist. She's a FST, fascio stretching technique therapist, like ART. One session, and now keep in mind, I was still using machines. Like I could get my body into like a hammer machine or certain chest press. Like the my favorite was the free motion where it's like cable press type thing. I loved that thing, and I still do. I work with her for one session, come back an hour after that, and the pain was gone. The next day, I was bench pressing the 90s.
What?
Swear to God. Swear to God.
Wait, what was your problem? Tendonitis?
Yeah, it's a bicep tendon. It's just so inflamed. And I think it was from my old job, like doing repetitive movement of lifting my arm.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it just never went away. And I went to one session and boom, one session. The next day I picked up like the 30s and I was like, well, I'll give it a try. And I was like, there's no problem. I went to the 40s. It's like, okay. I went up to the 50s.
What was the name of the technique?
FST, fascio stretching technique.
And how long did it take? The session?
I went to an hour session with her. Now,
got to be kidding me.
I swear to God. Yeah, I shot a video of it because I was like, I did the 80s and I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go to the 90s. I was like, I got to get a video of this. And I shot a video and I was able to knock out like 10 good controlled reps. I went up to the hundreds for 20 within the next 2 months.
Shut your pie hole.
Yeah, but then my other shirt, my other shoulder started hurting though.
See? There always has to, like, all your body parts take turns hurting, right?
Right, right.
It's like when one goes away, it's replaced by another one. It's, you should see my workouts now. I train so defensively, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure people look at me who don't know my history and they're like, how the hell does that guy look like that doing that? Like, I need to stop doing all this heavy shit and just lift, you know, Q-tips like he's doing. It's pretty bad. But that's what I have to do. Look, it's really this simple. Either I do that or I don't get to go to the gym and I look like I look like a 54-year-old man. And obviously option B is not an option. It's just not.
No. All right, I'm going to move on here. Next question, who do we got here? It looks like Matt Bell. Matt Bell was a listener of the first call out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he's a listener of a lot of the Advices shows. At least I think he listened to the first call out. All right. Dave is one of the few high-level athletes that I've heard openly discuss site injections of AAS. He's also said that he thinks they are effective for site growth. Could he share his experiences and elaborate?
There's no doubt in my mind that it does work, switching up body parts and site injecting. And I'll tell you how I know this. I know this because the only two places I would inject, and I have no scientific reason for this. I can't back it with studies. I can't. Okay. I can't do that. But at the same time, I don't care. Because I know what happened, and you can call it anecdotal all you want, which it is, but there's no doubt in my mind that that was what made the difference, because it's the only thing I changed.
I'm down with some anecdotal evidence here. I like that.
So here's the anecdotal evidence. For the first half of my career, I only had two sites that I would use.
Okay.
My glutes. Consequently, my ass looked like a Clydesdale horse, and my physique was always leg heavy. Which I didn't mind. I liked that lower body being all full and being, you know, dominant like that. And then someone showed me that you can use other body parts. You know, so I started doing deltoids.
Okay.
And within about 6 months or so, I'd say, they were huge and capped out.
No kidding.
Way more than they ever were. I changed nothing about my training or diet. So that really was the only change I made. Then I started doing my buys and tries, and I had my arms at one point, which were always my weak point, up to 21 inches. And I don't care who you are, what you say, or what science you have to the contrary. I'm telling you, that's what made the difference.
Was it muscle or inflammation, or what did you have going on, do you think?
Oh, it was muscle. Absolutely. Okay. Muscle. Now, obviously, post-injection, it was just the bolus of oil sitting there.
Yeah.
But since I was rotating, there wasn't always a bolus in there. So it had to be, you know, it had to be muscle. Plus, let's face it, when I'm dieted down for a show and everything's striated, it's not inflammation, it's muscle.
Okay.
You know, but you know, the only, so I definitely noticed a difference in the, in equaling out my upper to lower when I started bringing the injection sites upstairs. Again, I can't explain it and I don't care that I can't, but I'll tell you this, just try it and you'll see what I mean. Now, I don't know anyone who doesn't rotate like that, but for the first, I don't know, I guess decade, I didn't
really.
I just went back and forth.
I'm guessing you were doing lower volume then too of oil. Yeah,
I was. It wasn't until I was really, really pushing for my pro card and took it a little more seriously than just a hobby that I started to require, you know, that kind of rotation.
Okay, well, that's a good one. What do you think about? Do you think it was the steroid, or do you think it was just like the oil expanding stuff? Like, could you get the same thing with an SEO?
If I had to come up with some sort of explanation, I would say, and this is probably going to sound half-baked because it is, but maybe because the receptors that are in that muscle have first dibs at the shit.
Yeah.
I know it's a systemic thing, but maybe the receptors that are in those muscles that are closest to where you put the bolus, take it up first, and then there's kind of a decrease in the uptake of the body parts that are the farthest from the injection site, or I could just completely be full of shit.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe. I just don't know.
One of the two.
but hey, listen, if you don't know a lot about it, doesn't that sound viable? And you know,
I like it. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Right? Sounds as good as anything else that you can come up with.
Well, listen though, you're saying at the end of the day, it's like, you don't really know for sure, but through your experience, you know, that's what you saw. And you know, whether it was muscle, whether it was inflammation, whether it was stretching the fascia, whatever it did, it did what you wanted, basically.
Who gives a shit? And I never worried too much about the why. I never worried too much about, can this be backed up with science? I worried about, does A and B equal C?
Do I look the way I want?
Exactly. Does A and B equal C, and does it equal C every time I do it? If it does, not only with myself, but with my clients, then it becomes a scientific fact in my book. Because guess what? In my office, if you think about it, I've been running a 25-year experiment with my own subjects, double-blind placebo, you know, but in my office. Because I have about as controlled a situation as any study does.
Sure.
Because the thing about it, a study is just using fucking people. You know, we put 25 people on a specific diet. Yeah, did they follow it? You don't fucking know.
Yeah.
You know, I have a decent idea of what my people are doing, if they're keeping journals and if they're honest about it. And I've had a unique opportunity to, over the past 2.5 decades, to watch cause effect over and over again with a core sample of people, i.e. my clients. So I get to see what works, what doesn't, and what works over and over again, whether or not it can be backed by science. For instance, i.e. eating every 2 hours.
Yeah.
Eating every 2 hours, I'm not gonna say that it definitely, quote unquote, speeds up the metabolism, because there's no science to prove that. And I, you know, I get heckled every time I say it. But I'll tell you this, if you truly eat a whole food meal every 2 hours, in addition to training and dieting, and I mean training and cardio, something does happen to your body where it starts to eat that food up much quicker.
Oh yeah.
And then it just does. It just adapts to that frequency of eating. It just does.
You start getting hungry every 2 hours. You know?
You do. So if you eat every 5 hours, that's a big difference between every 2 hours. And I ate every 2 hours on the dot for 6 months in a row. And what that did to your metabolism, I swear to God, I could not eat enough. Yeah. I was taking in 7,000 calories and getting leaner.
Good God.
At 42 years of age.
That was for the North Americans?
North Americans. Now, I know there's a whole lot of factors, but I'm telling you this. I know that when I would first start the whole eating every 2 hours at the beginning of each season, initially I would get fat.
Really?
Because my body wasn't used to it and had to get used to that cadence, had to make all the biochemical changes it needed to make to facilitate this food coming in every 2 hours. And then my body realized, he's not going to stop doing this.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to keep doing this. So we better chew this food up, get rid of it, prepare for the next bolus that's going to come in. And repeatedly doing that over 6 months, well, we saw what happened. You know, yeah. I went from a skinny fat guy to being basically see-through on stage.
Yeah.
And eating 7,000 calories along the way.
I agree. I don't really care. I've seen it.
Yeah, I don't really care about the why. I don't care why something's happening. I just care that it's happening. And if that happens every time I do it, I will repeat that behavior, regardless of whether it can be proven scientifically. What difference does that fucking make?
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. I think that we can get too lost in the science. And I feel like there's a generation of people coming that just get so wrapped up in that they aren't getting big. You know what I mean?
Like, look at Ian McCarthy. He's the same exact size as he was when he first attacked me 10 years ago about saying that eating every 2 hours, you know, speeds up the metabolism. I'm like, dude, why don't you try some of the shit you're making fun of me for and see what it does for you? Because clearly what you're doing and going by the book ain't working.
Yeah.
Change your book.
I didn't realize it's been that long.
Yeah. I forget what year the big debate was, but that was several years after he started attacking me.
He should be pretty big by now.
And he's just not. So there you have it.
All right.
So I've been big like 17 times to his zero.
I got a question from Vache. He says, when's Mike Pulcinella going to come on?
That's a question, really? I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it was on my thread.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I think he was asking that because I think that was in response. I spoke to him. He's one of my guys, and I know him personally. I see him at the gym, and he made a comment to me. He was like, "Yeah, Dave said that he doesn't like when people give Mike the credit because he said you were joking. Like, I'm the star. I'm the star." He was like, he wanted to get the good Pulcinella.
It's not that they give him the credit. It's that they call me Mike.
Yeah. But
that's the problem.
You jokingly said, Mike though, you're Pulcinella. Like, I'm the star.
Yeah. It's not him. It's me. Come on.
Yeah.
But, dude, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Let's have him on.
We should get him on. I think that'd be a great idea. I know he's up for it, too. He said he'd love to stop in from time to time.
Oh, I know it. I'll run it by him, see exactly. Maybe we can pin him down for the next show.
All right. Speaking of Mike, Dave.
Dude, I'm going to kill you.
Speaking of Mike, he had a question for us too. He said, you mentioned developing, and you know it's going to be a good question. Mike's not going to ask us something without putting some thought into it.
It's going to be a nerdy question too. You know
that. Let's see. You mentioned developing a mind-muscle connection in the first episode, but I think you need to elaborate on how one does that. I think people hear the phrase all the time, but they don't really know what it means. That's a good one.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It is a matter of, first and foremost, a matter of time, just putting in the time. But you'll see, like, when someone starts out, you can just tell that they're trying to get the actual motor neurons to fire in the general direction of the movement. You know, it's hilarious. But you're not going to be able to focus on any one muscle when you're first starting off. Over time, you develop that ability to put the emphasis on the muscle itself. But there are several ways to do it. You know what? A really good way I found when I was personal training to get the clients to do that. Now, obviously, with functional training, you don't want to do that. You want to use your body as an entire unit. But with bodybuilding, when you're trying to isolate certain body parts, you want to make sure that this movement's hitting the lats and only the lats, that this you're hitting your biceps and you're not getting your front delt involved and all that stuff. What I used to do is I used to put my finger lightly on the body part that they were training. So if I had them doing like a reverse fly, I'd put my fingers on their rear delts.
Okay.
And that just automatically made them think of their rear delts and they could feel my fingers where they were. Hmm. And they would start using that body part that had the fingers on it. To move the weight with. So that was one technique that I used. But honestly, the real answer is just to put the time in and really get to the place where your neurons are firing in the direction of that exact one body part that you're trying to hit. And I do believe another part of it is genetic. I've seen people who've been in the gym for just decades and still can't fucking do it. Like I see people who are trying to do a chest press and you see them at the top of the movement and they make their chest concave at the top and they bring their shoulders forward. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah, I do.
So on a like on a seated chest press, you're sitting upright. And when you push the bar forward, you should retract your scapula.
Yes.
And at the top, you should see your pecs come together and lump up.
Yeah.
And that's pec contraction. However, you see a lot of people come up, and these are sometimes experienced guys where it just looks like, you know, goal is to push handles forward, you know, yeah. And there's no thought behind it, and there's no connection with the pecs. So you see them push up, and then at the top of the movement, they collapse their chest, and you'll see those same people usually have overdeveloped or stronger tricep and front delt development. Mm.
Yeah, my shoulders were way stronger than my chest at first because that's what I was pressing with. But I think I started doing what you're talking about, and I started getting an actual – you know what else it is? I feel like if you don't have any muscle in your pecs yet, it's harder to flex them.
Exactly.
You know?
Or, you know, the way your anatomy is set up, if those muscles, the front delts and the triceps, have better attachment points than your pecs, they will tend to take over in that movement. Like my friend Timmy, his triceps and his shoulders were huge, and his pecs were like wafer thin. Well, he could bench a lot, but he wasn't benching using his pecs.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he just wasn't doing that. And the key to really, with the pecs anyway, is just scapular retraction. You pull the scapula back and you hold them there.
I'm doing that.
And then
right
you
now.
Pretty much, yeah, I am too. We're both doing it. And then you pretty much have to use your pecs to move the weight in that situation.
Yeah.
You know?
I get it. Yeah, I feel it too. I feel like I made that mistake before. So that's the key. That's the key in that situation. What's another body part that people, back is a tough one, I think.
Back is a tough one. Everyone feels it in their biceps. Again, Scott.
Wait. I got one for you. I want to ask, this is for me personally. All right.
Okay.
I've developed a lot of back thickness, but in comparison, my width, like the actual, like my rhomboids, everything, the density is there, but my width is what's lacking. What am I not doing?
I always made fun of people who thought there were width and thickness movements. I'm sorry.
What am I not activating though? Because my back is very thick, but the lats themselves aren't getting the activation. It's more like, what am I doing wrong? Because it's like the rhomboids and the traps, those all get activated really well.
I'm sure you are activating your lats to a degree, but you ask yourself this question. In a pull down, right? Okay. What does your form look like? Now, I'm known for doing row downs, but I'll tell you this. I am. But you know what? My form on pull downs, that row down, which just looked like the sloppiest fucking thing in the world, truly, truly put the emphasis directly on the belly of the lat. It just did. And the only thing that was sore on me the next day after doing those was my lats.
Okay.
And every person I ever had who I taught them how to do that correctly, couldn't even raise their arms up over their head.
Explain to everybody what, like, how you did that. How that exercise.
So it was basically a seated row, but in an upright position. So I'm using the pull down machine.
Yeah.
I have the handles, you know, the parallel handles, the close grip parallel handles that you use on a low seated pulley row, and I hook it onto the pull down. And I start from a complete stretch position.
Yeah.
And I pull down, and I pull down. And my upper body would sometimes, depending on how heavy the set was, would end up almost parallel to the floor. That's how far back I was leaning and swinging. But the thing about this is, and the reason I used that ballistic movement for that and for leg extensions and things like that was because you could end up in a situation where you were, if you were doing it right and you were putting the emphasis on the muscle, you could use way more weight for way more reps than you could if you were trying to keep it really, really strict.
That's a good point.
So, you know, time under tension, first of all, and then overload. So I was making them all my bitch, if you think about it. I was taking the stack, and at one time it was a 400-pound stack. And I was doing that for sets of 20.
Jesus.
Now, you have to understand this. If you're putting that emphasis on your lats, if you're putting 400 pounds on your lats predominantly for 20 reps for four sets every back day, it's going to grow. And my lats were like slabs, just slabs of beef. I had stumbled upon something that was so effective but looked so wrong, and people just couldn't get past the fact that it looked so wrong, but at the same time nobody had a back like mine.
So the answer is, that's what I need to do.
The answer is, I want you to try row downs. I really do.
I'm going to have to go back and watch Raising the Bar so I can.
I want you to go to Raising the Bar. I believe it was 2.
Okay.
I'm in my flannel shirt. And I'm doing the close grip row downs and emulate that form and see what happens. And it has to be, by the way, has to be sets of 20 reps.
Okay. I'm going to try it. What about now? Here's something somebody told me. When I do my dumbbell row, I don't like flex my, you know, I bring the weight up, but I don't like pull my shoulder back.
It doesn't matter because the most important part of that movement is the stretch of the bottom, which, by the way, very few people get. They pull it short.
Yeah.
I hate to see this. And I was just talking to my cousin Steve Pulsinella about this today, how no one, I haven't seen anyone do a T-bar row correctly in about a decade.
Really?
Everyone does the same thing. Now, you remember how Arnold used to do them, where he used to start from the floor.
Yeah.
In a completely stretched position, right? Where the lats are completely stretched and then pull up. And you're not so much emphasizing the top of the movement where you pull in, but you're emphasizing that bottom, that stretch, and that pull out of the hole. Boom, right?
Yeah.
So I used to do them like that. And they were great. But you see people, what they do every time now is they almost stand up straight. And it's like a 5-inch movement pulled into their belly.
Oh yeah.
And there's zero, and there's no stretch. So the entire bottom half of the movement is missing. And it just bothered me. It's like the leg press, everyone does half reps. Yeah. I can't stand it.
Maybe it's because you can go like, if you just do that little half range movement with the T-bar, you can load a shit ton of plates. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I see them with like 5 plates on them. I'm like, dude, if you did this right, it would require 2 plates and you'd have a bigger back.
So it sounds like the stretches, you know, you mentioned that, and you mentioned the stretch in the row down too. Is that the key in back, is getting the stretch?
It is absolutely the key. So when you do those, I want you to be aware of the fact that at the top of the movement,
yeah,
you should be being pulled out of that seat, and you should be reaching for that pulley, that top pulley as much as possible and getting as close as you can and letting your lats pull out.
Yeah.
Pull out of the socket, sort of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the start of the movement, is that from that position with as much weight as you can do for 20 reps.
All right. I'm gonna try it.
And then you lean back and you pull it into your sternum. And at the top of the movement, it's kind of like a rocking, like rowing a boat, rocking type movement. And it's unparalleled in my opinion for back development, for lat development.
Well, you had a good back. You're a back dude. So
yeah, I mean, the lats were like honestly, like slabs of beef under my arms. It's crazy. And I started doing that at a young age. I remember the first gym I belonged to, I was 16 years old, and I rigged the pull down machine so that I could do that. I actually was on the floor kneeling with the bar behind my knees. And I was using the whole stack and doing that. And then the instructor was like, that's incorrect, sir. Like, no, it's not. Because my lats are fucking sore the next day.
All right.
So, yeah.
We got one more question and then we can call it a night. Andrew Evans. You know Andrew? Mm-hmm. He says, no?
Negative.
All right. He says, you touched on it in the first episode. What do you think about dieting for a show with a 6-food type diet as a natural? Do you think the super low fats would greatly affect hormone levels? How much fat should someone not enhanced add to a contest diet?
And you know, that's a great question. And that's something that's brought up a lot with natties, that you can't do that. But I'll tell you this, you know, I've been prepping people for 25 years and I've had a lot of natties under my belt who I've brought in shredded and big using the 6 foods approach.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that the 6 foods, the unadulterated version of the 6 foods is all that works for everybody. But I have had a lot of success with it, not only with myself, but with a lot of people. Of course, I'm not locked into it, and we can add fats, we can change up the carbs. Some people actually work better with white rice than they do with sweet potato, and that's fine. You know, but for me, sweet potato was one of the 6, and for a lot of people it is. I've brought a lot of natural guys in with the 6 foods approach, but how I did it was I brought them in from the starting point of their prep having a lot of fats.
Okay.
And I slowly pared them down, and only the last 12 weeks were the 6 foods. I don't think it's an issue with a natty bodybuilder if the duration is brief. If you don't keep them with no fats for too long.
Okay. There's a big glaring question I have to ask you. So if we are assuming that not everybody here knows you, not everybody's seeing the documentary, then there is a possibility. And I would love to go into this as like an actual topic on another episode. But what are the six foods that work? Because we don't know. We might not know right now.
Wait, there's actually a human being doesn't know what the six foods that work are?
I might not even remember. Can I try? Because I might not remember.
Scott, you have to remember. That's like the most famous video my brother ever put out was the six foods that work video. And by the way, that's the video that got me in trouble with Ian McCarthy in the first place. Because he saw that and he was like, it's people like you who give people eating disorders.
Oh, God.
This is incorrect information. There's no science to back that. And all carbs are created equally. And all the macros can interchange for all the other macros. And you're stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the six foods?
All right. So from the top, let's see. We got chicken. We got eggs. Mm-hmm. We've got egg whites.
Go back. First of all, it's not just chicken.
That's a good point.
You can be talking about hot wings. You can be talking about a lot of things.
Okay, buffalo.
Let's go back.
Starting.
Let's be more specific.
Buffalo wings from the time. That would be good. Yeah, no. Chicken breast.
Yes.
Egg whites. Mm-hmm. Sweet potato. Mm-hmm. Rice. Is it brown rice?
At the time I made the video, I had considered brown rice and sweet potato interchangeable. Okay. But towards the end of my career, I distilled it down to only sweet potato, no rice.
Broccoli. Yeah.
So I need you to do the version where there's six foods without rice in it. So go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. I think I got four.
In the final version of the six foods,
there
was no rice. So let's go. So we got chicken.
Oh, I just fucked myself on this because I seriously forget. Chicken, eggs, sweet potato, broccoli. I'm at four.
There's one more. You got one more. You got two more.
Two more. Yeah. And that's why, well, process of elimination here. It's not beef. I know it's not beef. Fish. Mm-hmm. Fish.
Tuna.
Tuna? You did the tuna out of the can. Yeah. And I just guessed on that.
Remember tuna is a beverage?
Oh, I do remember that. But you,
tuna is a beverage.
I guess I haven't watched the movies in a while. I'm going to have to go back. I've got five.
You need a refresher course.
I have five. That's it. That's all I got. I know that bananas were on there at one point, and then you eliminated them.
Yeah. Eliminated. So here they are. I'm having trouble with this tuna. You're fucking me up. I'm going to do it in order that they were eaten in the day. So egg whites, oatmeal.
Oh, oatmeal. I forgot oatmeal. How can I forget oatmeal?
Egg whites, oatmeal, tuna, sweet potato, broccoli, chicken breast.
Boom! I forgot the oatmeal. That's where I slipped up.
Yeah. So my diet consisted solely of those foods for 24 weeks prior to the North Americans every year. And obviously the result was just, I was just ridiculous.
And here's the thing is that you determine through experimentation and basically, like you said earlier, A plus B equals C, you determined
every
that
time.
These six foods, there may have been other things that could work, but you knew
these
six foods worked.
Sure. And people are always like, what about this? What about that? So I'm like, dude, this was not arrived at like spontaneously. One day I woke up and said, let me do it. Those six foods were distilled down to those six foods over three decades of me trying really everything. I tried every food and every combination. This is what people don't realize. It's like, well, this guy doesn't know. So trust me, this was an experiment on myself that lasted for three decades and ended up with those six foods being it.
Well, I have an example of how you came to that. Tell us about, because I remember a lot of shit. I might forget a lot of shit, but I remember a lot of shit too. Tell us about Brussels sprouts and how you realized they didn't fit.
Okay. I had gotten down to the point where I was, I guess, 5% body fat, right? About a month out, and I'm looking for that last degree of definition.
Yeah.
This is a crazy story. And even when I tell it, it just seems nuts. But you got to realize that as you get leaner, it gets exponentially more difficult to get that next percentage.
Oh, anybody can get somewhat lean, but to get shredded, that's where it gets really hard.
Listen, going from 20% to 10%,
yeah,
is a big difference than going from 10% to 5%.
Oh yeah.
And then from 5% to 3%.
Or even 4.5%.
And I will tell you this, exactly. I will tell you this. When you're down that low, yeah, you wear every food you eat. You see it on your body when you eat it. So you're at the point where you're so sensitive to how you look and what you're holding that you'll notice. If you make a deviation, you'll see it,
yeah,
or feel it. So I was down to the point where I was a month out. I was loving my Brussels sprouts, right? So that was the vegetable I was using. It wasn't that broccoli.
Okay.
All the other foods were the six foods, but I was using Brussels sprouts and I was eating a whole bag of them at dinner. And I thought to myself, you know, and I hit a sticking point. I wasn't getting any leaner. And I thought to myself, what's the thing in your diet that you're enjoying the most? Well, Dave, it's your Brussels sprouts, isn't it?
Interesting.
I'm like, yes, I enjoy that the most. They taste really good to me, and I love them. I said, you know, I'm assuming they're interchangeable for broccoli.
Hmm.
I've been making that assumption this whole prep. Huh. And here I am at 5% body fat. And I'm not moving. I'm not quite where I want to be. And I'm eating a whole bag of them every night. Let me look just for shits and giggles at the nutrition. And the sugars in the same amount of broccoli was like 1. And then in the bag of Brussels sprouts, it was like 20.
Oh. Oh.
And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So I switched to broccoli and I continued to move towards my goal. And I said to myself, I said, self, I will never, ever deviate from the six foods that work ever again.
Yeah.
Not in any way. And I didn't. And for me, that was the holy grail. I'm not saying this for everybody. And I never said that. But I'll say this. When I finally got that formula down, I wouldn't change it for anything because it was the holy grail for me. For me.
So Andrew Evans, he can use the six foods, but that's not where you would start him at it, you know, 20 weeks out, right?
No, on a natty prep, I do a lot of the fats in the beginning, and I make sure we're holding on to muscle. I make sure his blood work shows good hormonal levels.
Mm.
And by the way, I have people take the blood work at the beginning too, because if he's starting off at a low test number, there's no way I'm going to do the six foods on him because he's already suffering. So assuming that they're all good with their blood work and everything's where it's supposed to be, I will taper them down. And the six foods will probably occupy about the last 8 to 12 weeks of the prep. So it's not happening long enough to compromise anyone's hormonal levels.
Yeah, I see.
It's just not.
Okay. Well, that's a good answer. That was good.
Does that answer that?
It does. I was going to save the six foods for another episode where we could actually like turn it into a topic, but we just did it. But we're ending the show with a bang is what it comes down to. You know?
Yeah, I had no idea we were going to go into the six foods, but you know, it's always a topic that I don't mind talking about at all.
Yeah, once it comes up, I felt we should do our due diligence and let people know, you know.
And I'm actually proud of you that you mostly remembered them.
You know? I forgot oatmeal. How could I forget? Because you know what? I'm not eating oatmeal right now. That's why. I know that's it. It's like oatmeal hasn't been in my plan for some time now.
Your homework for between now and the next show is twofold, okay?
Okay.
Number one, you have to go back and rewatch Raising the Bar 1, 2, and 3.
Can I just do 2 for now?
You can do 2 now.
Because
I think that's the best one anyway.
Do you? I do too. It was the most painful too, I think.
It was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah. You got to see it, guys.
Yeah, and you can still, he doesn't carry it in DVD form anymore for obvious reasons, but he sells the downloads. So you can just go to his site, MikePulsinella.com, and you can order it there. It's still available.
We've got it.
Anyone who hasn't seen it, anyone who's a fan of bodybuilding and hasn't seen these videos,
yeah,
they're in for something really special because what they're used to and what these are two totally different things.
There's a link in the show notes too for every episode. So for the site. So you can go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then go to your site too.
Yes, they can go to my site, of course.
That's in the show notes. What's your site?
DavePulsinella.com.
Hey, that's easy enough.
And there's also a pulseadvancednutrition.com.
Okay. That might be the one I have.
Yeah, that's the one that's with all the business stuff on it.
Okay.
So pulseadvancednutrition.com.
Yeah, that's the one that's in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So people can go there if they want to do some coaching or something like that.
Yeah. So the other thing you have to do.
Yeah.
If they want to do some coaching. Yeah, if they want to open up shop for themselves.
That's not what I meant.
Look at someone's website and just copy it. So
that's not what I meant. Hire you as a everybody's a coach.
I read Dave Pulcinella's website. I can be a coach now. So
I listened to the podcast.
Exactly. The other thing you have to do
is
you have to go and do row downs and let me know and report to me what happens.
All right, I'll do that. My back's kind of out right now, but I think it's coming around.
Don't do them if your back is out.
Yeah, if my back's hurting, I won't do it because then I will blame you and I'll say row down.
Well, the funniest thing that ever happened to me was some guy who had absolutely no visible muscle at all.
Yeah,
saw me doing row downs, right? And at the time, I was probably 230 in good shape. And he comes up to me and goes, "You know, you're doing this wrong." I said, "You know, I'm really not." He goes, "Yes, you are." He goes, "Take it from me. I've had 4 back surgeries, so I know what I'm talking about." I said, "No, you take it from me because I've been doing this for 30 years and I've had no back surgeries." So clearly you're doing something wrong and I'm not. Have a nice day.
You walked
right into that one.
What did he do? What was the look on his face like when he said that?
Honestly, he turned around and walked away. He had no idea what to say to that.
It's kind of like, good point.
It was really, he's like, didn't want to engage me on that. And why would he?
Yeah.
Why the hell would he?
So you're a busy dude. we have a hard time getting together to get the show because you basically... Every night, almost, you work like all through the day, all through the night, basically. How late do you train people?
Yeah, I work from home during the day, and then I go in usually around noon to work out. And then right after that, I'm in my office from 2 o'clock to whenever I need to be, which, you know, sometimes ends up being 8, 9 o'clock.
Okay.
So that's my day. And I don't mind it at all. I like the hours. But it does sometimes interfere with what we're trying to do because we're trying to record at nighttime. So, Thursdays I usually take off. So that's a good day. And honestly, and then Fridays is my early day. So I'm off at 5. So we can do it. We can get this done. Look, man, it's really not. It's easy to make the time when you want to.
Yeah. When you're having fun.
I can just schedule it into my day like I do a client. You know, it just doesn't matter.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I think this went well. I think we did good. I think we should encourage people to give us feedback too. That's
I want feedback. And how long have we been doing this tonight? How long did we go for? Because the first one I think was like 25 minutes.
Yeah, this is like an hour and a half.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's getting into the first call out realm.
Well, this is good. This is good. I think this is we probably stick, you know, somewhere around here or whatever.
Yeah,
just let it go where it wants to be.
Exactly. It doesn't really matter how long it is, just as long as it's good content, you know?
Yeah, we'll get this out. And then what? People will do what? We'll put a thread up with the release of the next show, something like that, maybe?
And when that thread goes up with the release of the next show, that's when they ask to have the questions.
Yep. So we'll collect questions. I'll post one too. So basically, you know, friend Dave on Facebook. You can also friend me if you haven't. And actually, I'm really bad with that because I kind of stopped accepting friend requests, and now there's like 8,000 of them. I'm not saying I'm popular, I just, you know, because most of them
you got to go and accept them. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm not your quote unquote friend, let me know. And because I want to accept the people that actually know me, not like just random people that don't have any mutual friends and just like hit add. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but see, for when you become like a more of a public figure, like what you're doing, you actually do need to add people who aren't your actual friends because those are the people who might be listening and you don't know them personally, but they're your fan base.
That's a good point.
You have to. So what I usually do to make the cutoff is I will look to see how many mutual friends we have. It's like, if it's like one, I'm like, no, you're not in the industry. You're just not.
Yeah.
So I usually could make the cutoff at like, if we have like 25 or less, no. If it's 25 or more, then I'll say, yeah, this person probably knows their way around the industry.
Or if not, if you have less than 25 mutual friends, then drop us a message and say, hey.
And you got it. That'll work too.
Hey, add me and we will.
Yep. I want to listen to the show. I'm a fan of your whatever.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, it sounds like we got a plan. Let's just put this thing in action. Anything we're missing here?
Awesome, dude. I don't think so.
All right.
We covered everything for tonight. It was a blast, man.
Yeah, man. This is good. Let's let's get this out to the people.
Do it.
How are we going to close this thing? That's what I'm stuck with.
It'll be easier for you to edit this one too, right?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. how are we going to close the show? Do we have like a saying or something like that that we do, or?
Yeah, it's called goodbye. See ya.
Oh, okay.
Radio.